15. So we're going to start. I'm Carol Berg, I'm from Rutgers, and this is Jennifer Martin-Biggers, and we're going to do like a tag team. But first of all, I want to thank you all for coming to the last session on the last day. So you must be really, truly dedicated musicians here. What we're going to do today is try to give you a feel for what Homestyles is about and what we've done with it. We're going to go at a fairly rapid pace because there's something to tell you. And we had posted at this tiny URL the slides. So if you would like to download it to your phone or whatever, please do that. I also wanted to tell you that I am also speaking in this session in another room. How that happened, I don't know. But I'm going to get this started and pass it over to Jennifer, and I will go do my lightning talk and back. And it was a real surprise to see my name two different sessions on at the same time. So, hey, you can do anything. So just to give you a quick background, this project is we worked on it as a team, Rutgers University, and we're in New Jersey, in case you don't know, University of Arizona, which is in Tucson, and Prevent Child Abuse New Jersey was another partner. They are the grantee in our state for Healthy Families America and Parents as Teachers. These are home visitation programs for very, very high-risk families, and those were some of the families who participated in Homestyles. So those are the partners in this particular project. Okay, so we already did introductions, so I will move on and give you just a really quick overview of what the session outline is going to be. So we want to talk a little bit about how we developed Homestyles and our amazing advisory board, and then how we developed and formatted and tested our materials, and then we'll talk about the implementation. And we're going to talk just a little bit about the assessment instruments, how we trained our facilitators, the individuals who helped us to work with the families. We had 757 families in this project, so we needed quite a few facilitators. And then how we went about recruiting participants. We are just wrapping up our randomized controlled trial on August 31st, so we are madly cleaning the data and starting to do some analyses of the data. And next year, we're going to tell you about what we found. But we're going to give you a sneak peek on what we found already, because we have done some preliminary analysis already. All right, so let's talk a little bit about development very quickly. What is Homestyles? It is a program that is designed to help parents motivate them and enable them to change their home environment. So I think we all know about the social ecological model. One of the areas of the environment that has received very little attention until recently is the home environment itself, which is really important to consider when we think about preschoolers because of the amount of time they spend at home. So what we wanted to do is to help parents create a home environment and lifestyles that would really help their kids to grow at an optimal rate and stay in a healthy weight or achieve a healthy weight. So that they would gain all the benefits of being not overweight. So the home, as I said before, it plays a dominant role in the development of the kids' eating and activity patterns. We also looked at sleep, which I'll tell you about in just a minute. These are parent-led makeovers, if you will, where the parents are in charge. They decide what's happening in their home, what they would like to change in their home, and how they would like to change it in their home. And the American Academy of Pediatrics supports these kinds of home-based parent education. So we're really trying to put the knowledge in the hands of parents and motivate them to make the changes in their homes itself. We also, when we started this project, really had a desired feel that we wanted to have for the project. We wanted it to be intensive because we know parents are super busy. So we tried to develop the messages so they could be delivered in less than 15 minutes because we knew they were really busy. We wanted to be interactive and engaging because there's so many things vying for people's attention right now. If it wasn't interactive and engaging, they would go on to the next website or change the channel or stop reading what we had. Needed to be fun, too. Non-judgmental parents carry a lot of baggage and guilt, and we didn't want to add to that. So we wanted to be non-judgmental, we wanted to be positive. We wanted to address parent quality of life issues. And the most important parent quality of life issue we found was that they wanted their families to be happier and they wanted to have closer families. Health was important, but not as important to them as happiness. and close families. And these need to be quick, easy, low-cost, or no-cost, everyday solutions that they could incorporate in their lives. So just to very briefly tell you, we very much use CBPR principles. We involved an advisory board at every step of the way. We had incredible advisors on our advisory board. Miles Faith, who probably you heard earlier today speak, was one of our advisors. Madeline Sigmund Grant, some of the big names in nutrition. They were very helpful. They were with us every step of the way. They were in nutrition, they were in psychology, child development, parenting, low literacy audiences. We even had our graphic designer on our advisory board because we wanted to make sure she totally understood the look and feel of the project. And these are just some of the advisors that I was just mentioning, adult learning that I had mentioned before, social work, home visitation programs, and others. The next step was to develop informative test materials. I'm going to turn that over to Jen. There you go. I'll be right back.
So just so you know, in addition to the tiny URL that you can get the link to the PDF of the handouts, we do, Colleen, one of our doctoral students, has our Home Styles e-books available. So all of the materials that we'll talk about, we have available on little USB drives, and they're up here at the end, so feel free to come up and grab them then when we're all done. So within Home Styles, when we were at the very beginning, we had our advisory board, and we said, okay, what do we want parents to know in this program for childhood obesity prevention? We came up with 12 key messages that we wanted to focus on. Most of the key messages were around nutrition and dietary choices. So included things like increasing frequency and quality of family meals, improving intake of fruits and vegetables, limiting sugar-sweetened beverage consumption. We also had two physical activity messages that we wanted to focus on. One on increasing physical activity, and then the other one more focused on decreasing screen time. We also were interested in promoting adequate sleep duration and sleep quality, since this is an interesting emerging area that's associated with obesity in adults and with children. We wanted to emphasize that as well. We also wanted to be able to help parents advocate for childcare settings that had all of these sleep, activity, and nutrition topics taken into consideration. Since the parents can control the home environment a little bit better than they could childcare, we made sure to build in some childcare advocacy tips in each of the Home Styles guides. So we used numerous key obesity prevention guidelines. We had the American Academy of Pediatrics, the White House had guidance on childhood obesity prevention, Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, all of these key obesity prevention guidelines we took into consideration. And then in addition to our expert advisory panel, we also conducted a very comprehensive review of the literature in addition to the lib review that was done for the writing of the grant. So in our library, we have, I think, over at least 1,400 journal articles that we cited and that we use as the evidence basis for this project. As Carol mentioned, we also used CBPR principles. We had parents involved in our advisory committee, and we're constantly doing outreach, focus groups, cognitive testing, and materials that I'll talk about more. We also wanted to use adult learning theory, since although I'm standing here lecturing you all to a certain extent, which is not a good adult learning theory principle, we wanted the parents to feel engaged. That they were learning from other parents, learning from each other, which is one of those key tenets. So you'll see a little bit later how we incorporated that. The social cognitive theory was the main guiding theory that we used for our framework for this project. So we wanted to take into consideration that we were changing behaviors, personal factors, and then also the environment, as they all are interacting at the same time. Some of the behavior change strategies that we used from the social cognitive theory included the use of outcomes expectations, improving and modifying attitudes and values of the parents, and then both self-efficacy and then also collective efficacy, since we're targeting the entire family as a unit, not just one person. We also used vicarious observational learning through examples of the other families gave in our guides. Reciprocal determinism, that behavior, environment, personal factor triangle. We had information for parents on how they could not only facilitate improving their behavior, but then also how to overcome potential barriers that they might have. And then we used lots of goal setting and self-reward and social support as well. So the one thing that I think makes homestyles really special, I've been doing homestyles for 6 years of my life, so I think it's very special, but the thing that I think makes it really unique is their use of motivational interviewing. And I'll go through each of the guides in a couple of minutes so you can see exactly how each of these theory constructs and motivational interviewing were actually applied into the guides. Motivational interviewing, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a patient or client-centered, goal-oriented consulting or counseling strategy. So what we wanted to happen is we wanted the parents and families that we're targeting to come up with their own solutions. Instead of having us as the nutrition professionals or the parenting professionals say, you need to do this, this is what's important for you, we wanted the parents to be able to come up with their solutions on their own in ways that worked for them. Since we know from other research that when people come up with their own goals and stuff, it tends to be a little bit more effective. So after we conducted our initial literature review and we put together our awesome advisory group, we then went out and did focus groups with parents. We had, I think it was 72 focus groups in total that we conducted in New Jersey and in Arizona, face-to-face focus groups with parents. And we wanted to know, what did they want in homestyles? What were they interested in learning? We had our topics in mind based on our guiding principles from the evidence, but what exactly did they want to know about it? What did they want to know about eating more fruits and vegetables? How could we help them? And as Carol mentioned, the main things that we started to find was that parents, they wanted this information and they wanted to help their families be healthier, but they wanted it in the context of making their families happier, of being closer, and having stronger family bonds. So one of the interesting things is that we kind of had to take a step back and go, okay, instead of focusing on the health and the nutrition aspects, we really need to be sure that we're targeting quality of life, and that is one of the ways that we're working with these families to help them motivate to change. After we had this information from parents and what they wanted and all of our evidence, we then made the first draft of our materials. And we put these first draft of materials through an expert review. We had both the people on our advisory panel as well as other area experts that we reached out to. I don't see anyone that, I don't know if anyone here reviewed our, Peggy, yeah, you reviewed some of our materials at this phase. So here we were really looking at getting lots of good feedback. Here is also where we started to incorporate how exactly and where we were using our social cognitive theory constructs and motivational interviewing techniques. So this is just a snippet of the first draft that we made of each of our guides. We just wrote the text. We didn't want to bring in any photos or colors or anything like that yet. We just wanted to make sure that the meat of the info was there and that this was the information that we really needed to have. And so we put together sort of a framework and then started filling in our framework. And then we also just used high technology Microsoft Word comment boxes to start putting in where we were getting at focusing on outcome expectations for social cognitive theory, where we were getting at relevance and rewards through motivational interviewing with the parents. After we had our black and white, not very attractive versions, as we were writing them, we then took them out and started to do cognitive tests. Each of the guys at this phase was cognitive tested with at least 10 parents in New Jersey and 10 parents in Arizona. So you can see where we're really, really, really focused on getting as much input from the parents as we possibly could. And a lot of really interesting nuggets came out that we would not have thought of that that were really very helpful and I think made the program much better. We also continue to do outreach interviews with experts in different content areas to make sure that other people who focus their research on education in these certain topic areas thought that what we were doing was good and appropriate and useful. After we did all of our cognitive interviews, we kept doing the refinements to the guides iteratively. So when we would hear from several parents the same thing, we would then make the change and then roll the changes forward, go out and do more cognitive interviews. Eventually, we completed them and then put them through one final expert review, and then we sent them out for copy editing. And this is one of the things that I think where Carol's experience and expertise in doing a lot of educational programs like this was very useful. The copy editor was able to find lots of these little typos and errors that after you look at something hundreds and thousands of times, you stop to see. So it was a good use of the money to have that help. After things were copy edited, we then sent them off to our graphic designer. Again, really awesome that we had the funding to be able to work with the graphic artist who put everything together, who designed our logo, all of our guides, all of our supporting materials, our ebooks, everything that we have. And again, she was involved from the very beginning in the advisory group, so she really understood the spirit and what we were trying to convey, and we worked closely with her as we continued to make edits. We then took the guides out once we had our pretty versions of them. A couple of them here. And we did another round of cognitive testing once we had the final, almost final, colorful versions ready to go. So, quick little aside, as one of the things that we learned while we were doing this project is that there were certain things that we couldn't find in the literature. So, for example, we were interested in knowing what should we put on the covers of the guides that can get people's attention to want to read them? So originally, this is some of the drafts that we had made for our family mealtimes guides. And they're pretty, they've got good pictures, diverse families on the covers, but there's a lot of blank space. And when you don't have that much space and you're trying to get your message across as an educator, we really wanted to do something with that. So Carol was at the supermarket and had a really good idea that, well, why don't we copy, mimic what they do on magazines? When you're standing in line at the grocery store and there's a long line, you pick up this magazine because you want to look fabulous for less. You want to have 15 snacks that will help to make you slim. They grab your attention. They make you want to read it. For our clinical trial, people are going to sign up that are interested in signing up. But we want homestyles to live on, and we want people to pick it up and go, oh, this is cool, I really want to read this. So what we did is we wrote down the top of the top selling women's and parenting magazines. We identified 367 cover lines. We took all of these, as our wonderful students annotate all of these cover lines. We then did a content analysis, and we found that these 10 themes were what emerged. So we then created a database of lists of different words and adjectives that corresponded to each of these themes, and we wrote our own messages that could be used on these guides that corresponded to all of our home styles guide topics. So we had two family meal topics, we had fruit and veggie consumption, we had all of these awesome cover lines that included the most motivating words and adjectives from these themes that emerged. We did a brief online survey with 77 moms of children, and we asked them, if you read this cover line on a scale of 1 to 5, how motivated would you want to be to pick up and read an article about it? And so what we ended up finding was that the happiness, fun, unique, special, and quick and urgent were by far the most motivating the themes. Topics that talked about controlling or improving, which is usually what we talk about in nutrition education, we talk about making over and fixing and improving, those were the least motivating to our mothers in this study. So it showed to us that we need to instead focus on these other topics that are a little bit more positive for these cover lines on our guides. We put together some word clouds for a publication. This research is actually in the Journal of Health Communication, and then we did something similar in Spanish, which just is in press now, which is nice. So kind of fun. You can see some of the different word clouds that can visualize what these words look like. So in the end, we put the most motivating cover lines for each of the topics onto our home styles guides. And you can see, compared to what they looked like before, they're a little bit more colorful, bring your attention in a little bit more with the different cover lines that are on the guide. So after all of our cognitive interviews, expert reviews, we finally had our final design of the guides ready to go. And these are the 12 home styles guides that we were left with in the very end, all very colorful, pretty, and again, have sort of a consistent theme to them. Once we had all of the English done, we then did a translation into Spanish and did also a review for cultural appropriateness, and did find that there were lots of words that had little slight nuances, so it took quite a bit of time actually to translate everything. Everything, all of the steps we did the same, from the black and white versions, working with experts, cognitive testing, again, with at least 10 parents in each state in both Spanish and English language, so that the materials we were creating in Spanish were just as good and just as strong and just as solid. These are the covers of the Home Styles Spanish guides again. Pretty much the same, just different, slightly different words, different language. So I'll take you through what the guides look like now. So each of the guides follows pretty much the exact same format. There are four-page mini magazines which have these cardstock ones, and they're in PDF form on the ebook as well. So each of them has their cover with the title, nice colorful picture, and hopefully a motivating cover line. When you open up the guide, the first thing that you see on the left-hand side is we have a section called Here's What the Experts Say, and then all of the guides start with this section. This is really the only part of the guide that has what you would consider to be sort of traditional education information, where we are, here's the expert saying, this is why something is important for you to do. And we felt that it was important for us to have that because we needed to establish at the baseline that this is some information from us as experts, but we're not emphasizing it too much. We're presenting it in sort of a very neutral way. And then we're also using social cognitive theory with outcome expectations so that the parents can expect right away when they pick it up and start to read it, here's what they're going to get out of this behavior. So for this example, it's decreasing sugar sweetened beverages. This is what they're going to get out of it. Less cavities, etc. Then we have a section where we remind parents that the kids copy them. All of the guides have this section on it. It's one thing we heard from parents over and over, my kids mimic me. So we wanted to be sure that we were reminding them that not only for their children's sake, being role models, that they needed to incorporate these behaviors for themselves as well, for their own health. The next section is where we really get into more of the motivational interviewing. Here we tell parents to pause, take a minute, and think about their family drinks. So here we ask them very open-ended questions, motivational interviewing technique, and then we have some scaling questions where we ask them then how important these things are. So for example here, it's very small, but we ask on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it to you that your kids limit sugary drinks? And then they give a 1 to a 10. And then we say, what made you choose that number? So they think about it, reflect a little. And then what would have to be different for you to choose an even higher number? So if for some reason they put a 2 or a 3, then they think, well, why isn't it that important to me? And it might be because their kids don't drink very many sugary drinks, so they don't think they have to work on it. But maybe it gets them to reflect a little bit more and go, well, maybe this is more important to me. Maybe I need to rate this higher than a 2 or a 3. And this is something that can be done with a facilitation. So University of Florida is using these with SNAP Ed classes where you can have a facilitator take parents through this, or a parent can read this on their own and hopefully get at some of those, have like a little personal motivational interviewing session. The next page, we have examples of what other parents have said, and these are quotes that we've taken exactly from the focus groups that we did in our cognitive interviews, and we made them into complete sentences and then put them in the guide so that parents could see there's different quotations from other parents just like them, so that the examples and solutions that they're getting on how to limit sugary beverages are coming from their peers. They're not coming from us as these experts in ivory towers. This is another motivational interviewing technique. Often when an MI facilitator is working with someone, they'll say, if the participant doesn't have an idea of how to make a change or a solution that they can do, the facilitator will ask, I have a couple of ideas, is it okay if I share it with you? So So this is sort of how we were trying to get at this here, that we have some ideas, and they're things that come from other parents. So again, adult learning theory, they're getting information and education from their peers, not from an authority figure. Also, hopefully this is improving their self-efficacy since it's normalizing some of their feelings and seeing that there's parents like them who have similar things they need to overcome. We then have a section called Even More, and each of the guides, this one was a little bit different depending on what we wanted to do. So in the Best Drinks Guide here, we talked about what about 100% juice? What about milk? What about water? Other alternatives for beverages. We then had another take a minute section where we ask these open-ended questions again. So here we ask, what are your thoughts about how other families limit sugary drinks? What did you think about these examples? You just read them. What do you think about them? The back side of the guide is all about goal setting then. Here we give parents some examples of goals that other families had told us that they'd set around limiting sugar-sweetened beverages in their homes. Since one of the things that we found in our formative work was that a lot of people aren't familiar with setting goals, they haven't set one before, or if they did want to set a goal around one of these healthy behaviors, they oftentimes had very big goals. They wanted to change the whole world. So here we told them to think very small, to come up with small attainable goals that they could work on and that they could achieve. And again, we used our MI techniques where we asked them to reflect on a scale of 1 to 10, how sure are you that you can achieve this goal in a certain time frame? What made you choose that number? So that if they chose a goal that might be a little bit too big, too broad of a goal, and they don't think that they can really accomplish it, then hopefully this will enable them to think, okay, maybe I should choose something that's a little bit smaller, a little bit more bite-sized. Hopefully, again, with using some of the examples, we're also getting at normalization by providing examples from other parents just like them. The final section is a little box we call our remember section. And this is where we give a really brief summary of the guide, reminding them what they just read, and then telling them to make their goals a family agreement, not a family argument. Since what we heard from these parents is they wanted happier families and more cohesion. So while you're working on making all of these changes, keep in mind the general family happiness. So we have facilitator versions of each of the guides. So we have a home style specialist handbook that we use to train different facilitators and the students that we worked with. And we put in each of the guides, we annotated them with little notations as to where the references came in from academic journals, and then also where different motivational interviewing and social cognitive theory came into play. So we have our Big Home Styles Bible, as we call it, and it's all posted up on our website too, so that if people are interested in using Home Styles, we have information on how you can implement this in other programs and use that information. So the supports that we have for the guides, in addition to just our pretty four-page mini magazines, we also have goal trackers. So since some people like tracking their goals and not everybody, because it can be a little bit too much of a cognitive load, like we learned in one session earlier today, we created goal tracking sheets that parents could choose to use. And on the goal tracker sheets, they were able to write down their goal and then mark off whenever they achieved that goal. And then we gave them ideas for rewards that they could use with their family once they met these goals. And all of the reward ideas were low or no cost, and they involved things that people could do as a family. So we had, this one is dressing up for dinner, making funny videos, hunting for rocks outside, all really developmentally appropriate things that are fun for 2 to 5 year olds to do. We also have enhancements that we use to support the information in the guide. So for the parents participating in the RCT, we would send them these enhancement materials whenever they selected a guide. So for example, the portion size measuring cups and then a little cling film that we had went along with our right sizing portions guide so that parents would get a little info card that they could put on their fridge or something, and then also these really pretty measuring cups that they could use as they were learning about portion sizes. And these are pictures of some of the other enhancements that we have. We it was a little bit of a slog, but it was also kind of fun picking out all of these different enhancements and then coming up with ways that they could use them. So on the backside of this little putting your cutting board into action, we had recipes that they could do with their family that were child appropriate, different games that they could play with the hula hoop, and the hula hoop broke part into pieces, so we could mail it to them, which was nice. We also sent the parents in the RCT nudges every 5 to 6 days. And these nudges were short little snippets. Parents could choose to receive them via email, text, phone, or a combination of the three if they so wanted to. They also had access with a toll-free phone number to the home style specialists in our offices at Rutgers, or they could email us as well. And then they also were using the website. So the website is where the parents would log on, where they would pick their guides, and where they would keep track of their progress. So this is just what the splash screen looks like when the parents go to log in. And then when they log in, this is where what the page looks like, where they can select the different guide that they want to work on that month. And then if they select a guide, they'll see a screen like this where they can click the little box to review the guide, which would open up a new window with a 4-page PDF. They could track their progress. And then click the other buttons where we had even more information. We had so much information from parents when we did all of our focus groups and cognitive testing that we obviously couldn't fit it into our guides. So we had the information on the website then, since we know that there's some parents who want lots and lots of stuff. We even have links to outside websites and YouTube videos, things like Sesame Street, that were all vetted for appropriate information if parents wanted outside resources as well. Our ebook, as I mentioned, my little plug, is also available. All of the guides, all of the trackers, all of the extra information that's on the website is all on the handy little USB drive. The ebooks also have Spanish and English. So if you want to use them, or if you're interested in getting more from us, we have a bunch, and we can tell you how to order them for relatively low cost. And they have this little card here, and I won't do it because it chips my nails, but you can pop out the USB and just plug it into your computer, and you have everything easy, set to go. So, flip over to the next.
So we have ebooks for you to take home. Please take them. And implement them.
Lots of
break it into two presentations.
Okay.
So I don't give up on implementation. We're a tag team when we do this. We've done this a couple times. So what I'm going to talk about now is this next part, which is implementation of what we did to implement it. Well, before we could implement it, we had to figure out about how we're going to evaluate it, selecting and developing assessment instruments. So the instruments, because this was very socio-ecological model oriented, looked at intrapersonal characteristics, what the parents were like, as well as the children. We looked at behavior, physical activity, sleep, BMI, health, and demographics, as well as psychographics that the parents had with regard to modeling healthy behaviors, their own confidence in themselves to be able to model and engage in healthy behaviors, and how motivated they were. Our interpersonal characteristics, we wanted to know about a household in particular. We looked at household organization. We looked at family support for these healthy behaviors. Were they thinking they were going to have some pushback from other members of the family? And how did that change over time? Parent feeding practices, what were they doing? Were they rewarding kids with food? And family mealtimes, what were they doing with family mealtimes? We also want to know about the home environment. This is a really important component of home styles. We want to know about the accessibility and availability of food and the kinds of foods. We are really particularly interested in fruits and vegetables, sugar-sweetened beverages, milk, and a few other items. Physical activity, we want to know, did they have a place to play inside and outside? Did they have toys and games that would that parents could play with their kids? And we want to know what the media environment was like. Do they have a lot of TVs and videos and things that would encourage sedentary behavior? When we got started on this instrumentation, we had a lot of really great ideas, and we spent a lot of time in the literature, but we still faced a lot of challenges when it came to instrumentation, and I don't think I'm telling you anything new for those of you that are evaluating out there. that we run into lots of problems. First of all, one of the biggest ones we ran into was the data that show parent-reported child height and weight are usually not particularly accurate. So we spent a lot of time figuring out how we were going to get more accurate self-report from parents, turn it into a student project. We ended up making our very own measuring tape that goes up to 78 inches so that we could get parent height. And one of the unique things about this measuring tape is that it states on there 1/4 inch, 1/2 inch, 3/4 inches, because we found that parents had a really hard time reading fractions and reporting them accurately. So 78 inches long, this was one of the really interesting challenges we had. There aren't many printers that can print something that long. We ended up going to a billboard printer to print this, and they printed on billboard and sliced it up for us, and pretty exciting. That string that you see there with the washer tied to it is a plumb line. If you've ever done any kind of construction or hung wallpaper, you know it needs to be straight. Well, one of the big problems we found is getting people to hang it straight, and not walls are not always straight. So we need to come up with an inexpensive way to make a plumb line. So probably not many obesity prevention grants buy washers, 5,000 washers. And they weigh a lot, I have to tell you. The UPS guy had a big cart to bring them on. All right, so accuracy, and we have a couple publications out showing better ways to measure and how you might be able to collect that data better. Lack of suitable instrument availability. There are a lot of great instruments out there, but they weren't necessarily appropriate for preschool families. They might work for school age or teenagers. One of the things that we found that we needed to adapt was for the home food environment. We wanted to know what's in their pantries. And if you look at some of the instruments, or all of the instruments that are out there, they're mainly checklists. And then once you get that checklist, what do you do with it? You know, you have all these checks, and it's kind of a challenge. So one of the things that we ended up figuring out how to do based on a previous study that we've done is we adapted the block food frequencies for individual intake to be for household environment. So we're very excited about that. And it's 17 items, or 27 items, sorry, 27 items, and it's pretty fast to evaluate. A real challenge for us was physical activity environment. Same challenge with this kind of evaluation is usually checklists. Do you have balls? Do you have basketball hoop? All this kind of stuff. What do you do with that kind of checklist? So we wanted to be more of an instrument where we could quantify the data. Just found out today that it was accepted, the paper was accepted, it has been caught, and it's the hop-up checklist. And it's specifically for families with preschool kids. We spent a lot of time developing instruments just simply because we couldn't find something that was valid or reliable or suitable for our audience, or wouldn't take too long to go out, had limited participant burden. So we did a lot of work in figuring out how we would develop these instruments and make them suitable for our project. And this is the typical format that you would follow when developing instruments, so I'm not gonna spend much time on that. But we started the literature review, used experts, did a lot of cognitive testing, did a lot of field testing, and convergent validity testing to make sure that they were going to really give us accurate data. Another challenge that we had is that there are some good instruments out there that are really long. They might have 18 items on them. And then we wanted to evaluate, you saw we had quite a list of things we really wanted to get a handle on. We had to figure out what we're going to do with these lengthy instruments. And one of the things that we have done in previous studies is we kind of have an algorithm where we go back to literature, we look at factor analysis, we figure out how we can use the highest rate of loading items, and then do expert review to make sure they still have the integrity of the measure that we're looking for, and then we did a pilot test to verify that we were still going to get good reliability coefficients. So what we did is, as I said before, literature review to find the most suitable instruments, examine the psychometric data that was published, looking at the most strongest loading factor analysis items, expert review to see if 3 to 6 of the strongest loading were really going to be representative of the construct, and then pilot testing to inform and confirm the internal consistency and unit dimensionality of the questionnaire so that we could, of course, want to be able to publish this, and we've got to be able to show that they are good instruments. And then survey design. So survey design, you know, we are taking surveys all the time, we're designing them all the time. Parents aren't doing this very often. They're not taking surveys a lot. So we needed to figure out how to make it interesting. We spent a lot of time talking to survey design experts, particularly online, because our data were collected online, because we wanted to be able to keep the parent attention, we wanted to minimize fatigue, and we wanted them to complete it. So we spent a lot of time with design. If you use Qualtrics, we are more than happy to chat with you about some of the things that we have discovered, the shading and using different kinds of blocks of data, presentation, giving mental breaks during the presentation of data so that people will stick with you and give you good information. Then all of this had to be translated into Spanish if we didn't have a Spanish version, and tested the Spanish audiences to make sure that they were still going to be useful for them. Then the next part was to train intervention facilitators. Is that you?
I think so.
Okay. We'll trade off.
Okay, so we put all the students who helped us with the Home Selves project through pretty rigorous training throughout the couple of years that we were doing this. We also had a part of Home Selves that we did a feasibility study with home visitation experts. And so that's something else to talk about for another day. They had slightly different training that they did. But for all the students that we work with who were working and recruiting to be our home style specialists, they all had to complete the university subjects ethics training. We worked a lot with customer service skills, how to answer the phone, scripting things out like that so that they knew how to best work with the participants that we have. We also created pretty detailed scripts for the phone, for email communication, for whenever the parents would contact us. And one of the reasons that we wanted to do this is to ensure that there was fidelity in the way that we were treating and that we were communicating with each of the parents, so that some parent wasn't getting something different if they called us and had questions about the website not working, or if they had a more specific question, so that we knew how to answer it. So that whoever was in the office, whether it was an undergraduate freshman year who just started working with us, or it was one of our more seasoned doctoral students, that everybody was approaching it in the same way. We also have very detailed protocols for how we would send the participants enhancements. So when a participant would select a guide on the website, we would get a notification that they chose that guide, and we would put together a little care package to send to them with their paper guide and their goal tracker, as well as what enhancement they would be getting. Since some of the enhancements would work for multiple lessons, we needed to make sure that we weren't sending people two measuring cups at one point, and that we were spacing out the enhancements. So we put together, in addition to our handbook that had all of our operating procedures in it, we had these big posters, yay for poster printing, that we put in our, we call them our home styles warehouses, where we had very specific that if a participant selected X guide, that this is what they needed to get sent and when. We also had our height measuring tape and different things like that in case they were going to be completing a survey when they chose a guide. So pretty detailed to keep track of all of this stuff, since we had so much information going in and out, and on any given day was probably the most guides and stuff that we sent out. I think one day we had like over 30 things that we sent to out for the UPS guide. So a lot of stuff going in and out of the offices. Lots of problem solving too. It was really good development, I think, for a lot of the students that we worked with, to help them understand a lot of these nuances. And if you have a small problem, if a package gets returned, how do you go about contacting this person to see if their address changed, etc. So one of the things that we found is once we get all of our protocols and all this awesome material and we use best practices and it's great, now we have to recruit people. And one of the things that you don't hear about in published literature, but that researchers will whisper to each other, is how difficult recruitment is. So we looked at a systematic review, a meta-analysis published in BMJ, on how do you recruit people to a randomized clinical trial. And this was our favorite statement in it, that there's a clear gap in the knowledge on how do you effectively recruit these people. How do you recruit people to something that they don't have to, they're not coming in, they're doing it in their home, and they need to stick with us for about 18 months. How do we get them? So we also needed to make sure that we were keeping our participants blinded. We had our treatment group, where they received the healthy home style stuff, And then we decided, okay, we need to have a control group as well. So we created an action control group with almost no money, since this was something that we realized a little bit later on. And we wanted to make sure that this control group had a very strong design, so that we were putting good effort behind it, and that the participants were still getting a bona fide treatment. Much of what's in the literature about a control group, especially in education, is to get delayed treatment or no treatment. And here we thought, we really would like to give them something at least. And it also is going to help us with maintaining our internal validity, so that they're still getting something, they're still getting the same TLC, they're still interacting with us, they still feel like they're getting something out of home styles. They're not just filling out surveys and not getting anything for it. So what we ended up doing is we created safe home styles. And luckily, a group in Wisconsin Extension? Is it Wisconsin Cooperative?
A variety of extension
sources. Yeah, a couple of different extension sources. We pulled information on home safety for families with young children. So we were able to take this existing information that was already out there in the public realm, put some pictures behind them and titles, and we had similar sorts of guides that were all focused on safety things, like how do you use a refrigerator thermometer? Should you be concerned about lead inside of your home? This is what the guides originally looked like, and then we modified them to look a little bit more like the home styles guides. And then we also had them translated into Spanish, again, so that everything was available in both Spanish and in English. And then we did, from a food safety project that Carol had worked on previously, had some leftover goodies. So we had microfiber cloths for dusting that they got with their like allergies and asthma guide, poison control stickers, Mr. Yuck stickers, little refrigerator thermometers, refrigerator magnets that they could use. So they're still getting a little bit of stuff from us. They're still getting some cool goodies that they can put on their fridge and that they can use with their guides. So we also needed to make sure that our recruitment materials were the same. So what we ended up doing is we had our little slogan tagline that we wanted on all of the recruitment materials, where we emphasized happier, healthier, and safer. And happier, healthier, and safer works if you're talking about home safety topics. It also works if you're talking about nutrition and diet and physical activity and sleep topics. So we were very particular with all of our recruitment efforts and outreach that we did and all the materials, that nothing specifically talked about childhood obesity. It didn't talk about diet, it didn't talk about activity, it didn't talk about home safety. That it was very kind of broad and general, so that people would be blinded as to then when they finally were randomized, when they logged onto the website for the first time, that they weren't expecting to get something and then would be upset that they weren't in the group they thought they would be in. Some of the different ways that we used our efforts towards recruitment materials, we created brief videos. I think I was in one of them. Mm-hmm. Being a fake parent participating in home styles, and it's fantastic. We also had tangible incentives available for the parents, so we gave them e-gift cards that we'd send to them whenever they completed a survey. They took 5 surveys throughout the course of the project. They also would get our cute, fun enhancements. And then we had intangible incentives. We reminded them that it would improve their family bonds, that their kids would be happier, that this is really, really good for you, in addition to all the stuff that we're giving to you. So we broke down, kind of combined our recruitment strategies into different buckets. So the first thing that we did is we put emails on tons of listservs. I'm sure a lot of you here got emails from us over and over saying, if you know anybody, please post this onto your listserv. And we sent these out at least 3 times over our 16-month recruitment period. We had a big Excel spreadsheet documenting all of our recruitment efforts and when we contacted people and who we contacted. We also posted things to websites. We had flyers at farmers markets, would post things in local businesses. They had recruitment flyers at my gym, at the local Panera, on the bulletin board, all over the place. We also did some social media work. We had a Pinterest page, Facebook ads, Facebook page. One of the interesting things with this, which is another interesting long story, was how do you keep, again, fidelity between the two groups? and not let people interact with each other, yet still tap into social media. We also did some media work. Colleen's father does a radio show with one of the AM stations in New Jersey, so I did a couple of fun radio interviews with him. One of our Prevent Child Abuse New Jersey colleagues did an interview in Spanish on the local Univision New York station. And then Chop Chop Magazine for Kids in New Jersey ran a little feature on the Home Styles Project. Did lots of face-to-face stuff at Rutgers events. Our awesome, awesome students would go out often and be our Home Styles cheerleaders to sign parents up. We also had lots of community partners that we worked with that would distribute information for us, pediatricians, daycares, etc. And we did a ton of personal contact for recruitment. We talked to parents of people we worked with, teachers, neighbors, everybody knew about Home Styles. We also used professional recruiters. So Qualtrics offers a service that they can recruit people to take a survey for you if you pay them. So we negotiated a way with them that they would recruit people to take our baseline survey, and then we got to keep them in Home Styles if they wanted to stay in after our baseline survey. Again, another really interesting long discussion as to how that all shook out. So how do you then retain people? You get them all in, now you have to keep them. You have to keep them happy, and you need to keep them coming back in the right periods that they're supposed to come back. So we did lots of constant surveillance. We have all of these really cool Excel spreadsheets and graphs. We had information we could download from our website, since we would track any time a participant would log in. We could then download that information and then pop it into Excel spreadsheets that fantastic Colleen would create for us, so that we could have reports and see how we were doing with recruitment, and then find out who we needed to contact, who was falling behind, and at what frequencies and intervals they were falling behind. Parents also, when they logged onto the website, were able to see how they were doing and be able to track their progress themselves, and we kind of outlined for them and would tell them what they needed to do next and how. We contacted them often. When someone was inactive for over 30 days, we would send them an email, then we did phone calls. They received their nudges on regular intervals as well. So we had lots of very specific protocols and things that we would do to keep in touch with them at specific time periods. Again, so everyone was getting the same treatment. The nudges came about every 5 days, and we, along with when we would mail out the enhancements and the guides, we had Home Styles stuff all over the box. We had stickers with our logo so that they would see it. And then all of the stuff that we sent them was branded with the Home Styles logo. So again, we were trying to make this something that they would see over and over and they wouldn't forget about it. We even sent them holiday cards. We sent Happy New Year's cards to them in these really pretty, bright, metallic envelopes so that they would hopefully not miss them in their mail. We tried to make it easy for them to contact us. They could text, they could email. There was a toll-free phone number. We had a Spanish-speaking student in the office almost all the time so that if someone called and spoke Spanish, one of the Spanish-speaking students could grab that parent and work with them. And then we had other little small fun things that we did to try and keep things fresh and get people coming back. We created these bonus book opportunities that parents would get either as a postcard or that they could click and go on the website. And here we'd ask them one small question. And it was usually something like, my favorite one was, if Oprah called you for an interview, what would you tell her about Home Styles? Really easy, open-ended things. And then when we get the bonus bucks back, we give them an extra dollar towards their next survey completion. So little fun ways to keep them engaged. So Carol will give you the wrap-up on this.
Great. So we are analyzing data like crazy, as you might imagine. So we don't have nice, beautiful tables to give you. But for a sneak peek, this is some of the qualitative data that we have from parents. That I thought I would just share with you. So these are some of the quotes. I greatly enjoyed the Home Styles program and would highly recommend it to others. So that was a real keeper for us. It makes a big difference for us. Home Styles brought our family closer. I learned so much. I love being a Home Styles parent. This program is great for everyone. I now make sure there's room in the budget for fruits and vegetables. Thank you so much. It was worth the time. I wish it were longer. We're going to miss you guys. And thank you so much for helping put me and my family on the track to better health. So these are, I didn't share, pick these. They are just
in the list on the spreadsheet of what parents are telling us. So that makes us feel great. Now, we'll look at the quantitative data soon and see how that shakes out as well. So before we wrap up, I just want to acknowledge the USDA. Thank you very much for giving us the funding to allow us to do this right, to really allow us to dig in, figure out, move forward, talk to parents all the time. And these are just some of the smiling faces of the, I don't know, probably 100, 125 students at University of Arizona and Rutgers who are involved in this project, graduate students, undergraduate students, and not even all nutrition majors. We have public health, lots and lots of other people involved with us. And this is, thank you, these are all the PIs that were on the project. John Morby, who some of you probably know, Kay Hongu, Gina Hernandez, who's at PCANJ, me, and Denise Rowe, our biostatistician at the University of Arizona. So, we have like a few minutes for questions. And I'm happy to try to answer those. Questions?
No questions.
Yes.
This might seem like a detail, but with the nudging, how did you determine what kind of frequency?
Oh, that's a really good question. So we should have shown you if we had time, we really didn't put it up there to show you the whole progress of how it would be. So we know that it takes time to change behavior. So we anticipated that, well, we knew we wanted an 18-month intervention, and we knew that there would be periodic measurements along the way. And so there would be about a 3 to 4 week period of time that they would have, ideally, to work on each guide. And we really wanted them to not work on a guide any less than about 3 weeks, because we knew that if they were going to pick a goal, they needed some time to work on it and try to achieve that goal. So based on that 21 days, we knew that, you know, things happen in people's lives. They go on vacation or, you know, something, it might be a holiday period or whatever. So 21, it couldn't be a hard 21. It needed to be a soft 21. So we made it, I think, 30 days maximum. And that's when we started calling them and reminding them to choose something new. So based on that, and we started out thinking, okay, so how do we divide this up? So about every 5 days, they would get a nudge. So we wrote 6 nudges for every guy. Well, we wrote a lot more than that, but then we had them evaluate, which we asked parents which ones were most motivating to them, and we just selected those to use. So we have a lot of leftover nudges that we never used because they told us they weren't so motivating as the ones that we used. So we used the most motivating ones. So that's really how it all boiled down. It was just mathematical. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Okay. I work with WIC, and in California, we have this mini granting opportunity for improving child retention.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so we had been talking about this, you know, that how some people do like that kind of checking off, that I'm touching base with you, I'm in here.
Right.
And we've been playing with apps and ideas for nudging, and you know, we're always trying to not over...
That was part of
pester.
Our...
Pester.
Yes, that was part of our thoughts, too. It's like, we don't want to send it every day.
Yeah.
Or every other day, because then people get annoyed. So
yeah.
We thought every 5 days they wouldn't be annoyed, and we didn't really have anybody tell us that they were annoyed. So, I don't know if 5 is magic or not, but...
Yeah, we were setting up, like, maybe a weekly, and then the phone call once a month kind of thing, you know, so... but it's really helpful to hear so many of the practical aspects. I love your presentation.
Oh, well, thank you.
Because you really walked us through so many of the details.
Good, good. Other questions that people have?
Yes. We also have a sheet of paper with our main home styles keys that include things like that. We have the from his BIMPA.
Oh, no, that's not in this presentation, but we can post it.
Yeah, we've got them if they want them.
Okay. All right, so we do have some lessons learned kind of thing that we wanted to do this presentation, but wasn't long enough to do, but we can certainly share those with you.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a clarification, so there was no home visit component?
So there was this is a very complex study. So what we talked about today was the online component, online for English and Spanish. There was also a feasibility study that was done with a home visitation with very, very high-risk families. So these were home visitors who normally went into the home, already had a rapport with the families, but they didn't have a nutrition background. So their training was very different than what we did with our students who had a nutrition background. So we trained them to had a nutrition background, developed a whole training program for an online certificate program for them so they could build enough knowledge base, much like what we might do with some of our paraprofessionals when they first come on board, so that they had the baseline knowledge. And then we trained them how to use motivational interviewing and how to use the guides, human subjects. It was a huge training program just for them. And they would then recruit their own families that were already in their program to see if their family would like to participate. And if the family would like to participate, then they did this as a part of their home visit. So it was very much a feasibility program because these were extremely high-risk families who often were in crisis, and they had to respond to the crisis, of course, before they could do home styles with them. So yes, it was a home visitation component, but we didn't talk about that today. This is almost like a separate study because they were such a unique population.
And so the students who were on the other side of the phone were also trained in all those things.
Oh yeah,
problem solved over the phone or facilitated over the phone.
Yes.
MI over the phone.
We were constantly training students, because you know, students graduate. so we were constantly training them to make sure that they were delivering feedback to parents in the same way every time, because that was really important for fidelity of the study. Yeah. So we have some fantastic students, I have to tell you. Yes?
I was wondering, two questions. How many parents did you get to participate in? You talked about recruitment, how did you retain them?
Yeah, so the ones we recruited we told you the different ways that we recruited them, and the retention, there was lots of ways in which we retained them. For example, being in contact with them often, having opportunities for incentives like the bonus bucks, having the specialists there available for them to help troubleshoot if they ran into some kind of issue that they couldn't work on themselves. And this is particularly important for the online families. With the home visitation families, we worked through the home visitor. We didn't work with those families directly. So that was through the home visitor. So we would troubleshoot or do whatever we need to do with the home visitor. Yeah, okay. Any other questions? So we are looking to disseminate this. We don't want this to be a project that sits on the shelf and gathers dust. So we would love to chat with you about it. Sharon and Carla, I'm going to call you out, from the University of Florida, are using them in their SNAP-Ed project. So if you want an example of how they're using them in group presentations, please chat with them. They're our great partners in that. So we just really want this to be disseminated and hopefully improve the lives of a lot of families who have kids.
And we love it.
Thank you, Sharon.